What's up, everybody? Great to have you here once again with us. A lot of football to talk about. Great content for you guys as well. Preview, match reviews from the midweek and preview for the weekend. So without further ado, welcome to the latest episode of Back on our Podcast. Josh, how are you doing, man? I know you're excited as well because so a lot of games to talk about and to digest.
Yeah, I mean, great fixtures. We saw Chelsea hammering Juventus, saw United scraping past Villarreal. But for me, I mean, a lot of matches to talk about. But for you, what was the standout fixture for you?
The standout fixture for me was Manchester City PSG. I think it was a kind of football where you have a system, people, a team that's pulling together and a team that they are better on paper, but they're not really working together as a team. So I think it's something, and I don't understand why people are having a go at Messi. I get it because Messi doesn't track back anymore, but still, like, Neymar, Mbappe, they were even worse. They were not even doing anything at all. I don't even understand what was the plan there.
If about this game in particular, I think Neymar actually tried to track back in this particular match, but Messi and Mbappe did nothing. So I understand why people are having a go at Messi. But for me, I won't even have a go at Messi. I'll have a go at the coach. Because you need to have a system in place. For me, Messi should be in behind the striker. Messi should not be a right winger anymore. Those days are gone. He doesn't have the speed for it anymore. So that's number one. Messi should not be on the wing. Secondly, Mbappe has his speed and the energy. He has to track back. Let's say Messi doesn't have the energy. Let's say Neymar doesn't have the energy. Mbappe has the energy. He has to track back. And I don't get why he brought on Di Maria in place of Gueye that was trying to actually defend and do something. So you brought on an extra person that will not run. So that was four passengers. I mean, it just shows how clueless Pochettino was on the night. So I wasn't surprised. If anything, I'm surprised that City didn't score more.
That's a bit harsh. Honestly, I was thinking PSG would win. As soon as they got that first goal, I was like, man, it's done. It's a wrap. But the thing
win?
Is, like...
Win?
Yeah. I was expecting PSG to win, but like... Because... Oh my God. Like, I just have to give it to Pep Guardiola once again. A tactical masterclass. And once again, what the performance from João Cancelo.
And you know, I actually predicted Man City to win 2-1. I got the prediction spot on, like, on the UEFA website. But in all honesty, I only predicted 2-1 because I wasn't sure if City would take their chances, which they kind of almost didn't. But if we are talking about how the game panned out, that should have been like a 4-1. Because it was so obvious that City needs someone that is clinical because they wasted chances. Mahrez had a couple and other players as well wasted chances. But at the end of the day, they got the job done. And I think they were this dominant as well in the reverse picture. Just that day, they didn't take their chances. So, I mean, PSG will be kidding themselves if they think they are at the level. Because what I saw on, was it Wednesday or when was the game? What I saw was...
On Tuesday.
It just showed me that PSG...
No, sorry. I'm misleading you. It was Wednesday. Yeah.
Okay, thank you. At least I knew my memory was not that bad.
Don't worry. Move on. Let's not gloat on this.
So, it just shows that for me right now, there are four teams that are clearly ahead of PSG in Europe. So, for me, I have City, Liverpool, Bayern and Chelsea ahead of PSG to win the Champions League. And the way Ajax is going, I actually have Ajax above PSG as well because PSG don't play like a team. You cannot win the Champions League with seven players defending and only three attacking. It's not possible. You need to have a team attacking and defending together.
Yeah, you're absolutely right. Like, if it happens that PSG wins the Champions League, it will be one of the most miraculous things we've seen in a long time.
Probably they would have sacked Pochettino by then because, trust me, they cannot win the Champions League under Pochettino the way they are playing. There's no magic that will happen.
Yeah, I agree 100%. So what about you? What game do you watch that was a standout fixture for you?
I was actually staggered by how poor Juventus were, because we both expected Chelsea to win. But when I expected Chelsea to win, I was thinking 2-0 max, probably keep a clean sheet because of how solid they are. But to score 4 and to score 3 so early in the second half, like to have to be 3 goals up so early in the second half and just cruise, I mean, it was actually quite disappointing to see from Juventus. But can we really say we're surprised?
I'll just tell you this. Honestly, there are some things that don't surprise me anymore. Like when you, like we just talked on PSG now. Like when Man City won, I was not surprised because right from time, we knew that PSG, they don't play as a team. It's the same thing now with this Juve team. Juventus, they are not good enough. Like there are so many players there, but realistically, so many of those players won't start for the likes of Chelsea, the likes of Manchester United, the likes of other big clubs in Europe. Like some of them are very needy. Some of them, like you always hammer on Ross Barkley and Daniel, some of them, they're not actual footballers anymore. Like, let's be real, they are so poor and abysmal watching them. They are so clueless.
And the system is still abysmal from the coach. So, but then.
Yeah, the thing is, why don't you even talk about the coaches? Like, I'm giving Allegri, like you've heard me before, maybe it's just me personally. I'm giving Allegri a benefit of the doubt due to the fact that he has done it before. He has been there, he has done it before.
That's the problem, because he has done it before, but does he still have what it takes? It's the same thing with Mourinho. I think Mourinho's best days are far gone behind him. Same thing with Van Gaal when he was at Man U. He was already past his best. He hadn't been in club football for a while before he took that job. I think Allegri is gone. I think he has done what he has done. But you know the interesting thing for me is you sacked Allegri. You wanted to move on. You wanted to play attacking football. You tried Sarri. He won the league, but he didn't walk up to the standard you wanted. You tried Pelu. So why don't you go for another attacking coach? You now go back to Allegri, but this time Allegri is now a lackluster version of himself. So he's now even worse than under Pelu. Like, I thought Pelu was rock bottom last season, Juventus under Pelu, but they just found a lower level under Allegri now. So,
what I would just say is, on this Allegri matter, I'll just give it this season. Next season, when he has a couple of decent players, then if he's still performing this way, then I'll be on his case. Just hear me out. Truth be told is, this team that they face is one of the best in Europe. No cap. So them losing 4-0, like, I was not surprised. Like, it's safe to say that Chelsea, they are out there trying to defend their Champions League title. And I think they will do so. And I think they will get to the semi-finals with the way they are playing, because they play so well that the fullbacks are always in prime position to score. And now the attacking players are not even joining the party. It's the defense that is even scoring these days. So when the attacking players start to sink and start to gel and they start to bring up the goals, man, long day for all the rest of the teams in Europe, because it's very hard to break down this Chelsea team currently.
Okay, let me just touch on the first thing you talked about. You said Allegri might have some new signings. I'm sorry to break it to you and all Juventus fans, but the club don't have money. So they are going to have to sell some of their best players, i.e. De Ligt, Dybala. No, Dybala's contract is even expiring. So I say De Ligt basically is the only player that any other team would be interested in for big money. So they have to sell him to get other players.
What about Chiesa? What about Chiesa?
Oh, yeah. I forgot about Chiesa. So you have those two. The rest, no one is going to be interested because either they are too old, like Bonucci or Chiellini, or they are not good enough, like the rest of the team. So they will still be basically the same players next season. So it's not going to get any better for Juventus. I just have to say that. Then for Chelsea, I agree that Chelsea are one of the best teams, but to lose 4-0 is actually embarrassing. And the Italian media actually had a go. The newspapers, they actually battered Juventus. Some things I can't even say because it's too harsh for this podcast. But I'm surprised. I'm sorry. I understand the anger from the Italian media. But I'll say those 4 teams I mentioned, 5 including Ajax, I expect the semi-finalists to make up, the 4 semi-finalists to come from those 5 teams.
No, of course, I agree with you. There's no There's no doubt. So let's get down to it.
Apart from the draws messing up with it, because you can have Bayern versus Chelsea in the quarterfinal, for example. So apart from the draws.
Yeah, no worries. That there will surely be upset, but I expect at least from the five you mentioned, I expect at least two in the semifinals. So let's go down to the business of today, which is the preview of the weekend's game. So there's only one place to start from. I know we just talked about Chelsea, and we're going to talk about Chelsea right now. The biggest fixture of the weekend, Chelsea versus Manchester United. Good old Manchester United. So what do you think Mr. Carrick on the wheel is going to do on this one?
Okay, so I think Carrick will pretty much do most of the same thing only did, because we saw his lineup. He still played defensive against Villarreal, had two holding midfielders. But the surprise he sprung was when he put Van der Beek in place of Bruno Fernandes. But I think maybe that was more like to give Bruno a rest, not to say that Bruno is not going to be a bench player. So I think Bruno comes back in. I think maybe Van der Beek sneaks into the midfield. I'm not sure, but I think more of the same. But the interesting thing is he put Sancho and Rashford was on the bench. So I guess Martial didn't cover himself with glory. So I don't expect Martial to start it again. But if we can see Rashford and Sancho, I think it will be a very attack-minded Man United team. And I guess they have nothing to lose because everyone feels Chelsea will win. So they will go there to cause an upset. As crazy as it sounds, Man U winning a game being an upset.
Oh my God, man. Always bantering this club. The truth is...
I wasn't even trying to... I'm just saying Chelsea are in a better form right now. So, to be fair to Man U, Chelsea are going to be favorites against most teams they play, apart from City and Bayern and Liverpool. Any other team in Europe right now, Chelsea will be favorites.
Yeah, that's very true. But the thing is, like, judging by what you said, clearly Chelsea are favorites. And this is at the Stamford Bridge as well. So, going by what we saw in the Champions League from Manchester United, do you think, like, there's room for optimism from Manchester United fans to see, like, they could cause an upset against Chelsea at the Stamford Bridge?
No. No, there's no room for optimism because Ole was the one at the wheel that Tuesday night, because for 60 minutes, Villarreal battered United. We had De Gea making incredible saves. Some he was expected to make, some he wasn't expected to make in terms of how close the striker was to him. But Villarreal wasted all of them. And then United were gifted a goal. Like, it was a literal gift handed to Cristiano Ronaldo. And of course, he was going to score it. And then Sancho putting gloss on the scoreline, 2-0. So when you hear 2-0, you feel like United played well. No, they did not. So if we're looking at the result, yes, room for optimism. Reason for optimism. If we're looking at the performance, not so much.
Okay, fair enough. Because Paul Scholes was actually like lashing out the United staff. That's the ones that were in charge when Ole was there. And saying that they should as well leave because they are the ones that are still like the same people that
I think he has a point because Carrick was the one in charge of training sessions. So Ole was the manager, but Ole was not actually the one training the players. It was Carrick. So what has Carrick been training them on if they've been performing this woefully and now he's the one in charge? So what difference does it really make? Maybe the difference, the only difference we'll see is Van der Beek will be playing more. Otherwise, I think it's going to be more of the same.
Exactly. Okay, so, like, because the way you answered my previous questions was pretty much straightforward. And there's a stat that even backs this up. So, Chelsea are winless in their last seven Premier League matches against Manchester United. So, like, do you think that run will continue or it's going to end?
Seven.
No, I said Chelsea are winless.
No, I heard you. I was just like, wow, seven. That's a lot.
I don't know if this part is actually correct, but like going from where I saw.
Overall, I know Chelsea have 18 wins in the Premier League era. United have 17, then 23 draws. So even with not winning the last seven, Chelsea still have just that one win more than United. But I think that one ends now because this is the best Chelsea team we've seen in the last 3 years, which is when the last seven matches have happened. So, and then this is the worst United team, or certainly the team in the worst form we've seen. So I just think that this is the wrong moment for United to be facing Chelsea, especially as Rafinha won't be in charge. It'll still be Carrick. So, I mean, surprises can happen. Anything is possible in football. But if I were to put money on it, I wouldn't put money on United beating Chelsea.
Okay, so now let me ask you, what's your prediction? Just straightforward answer.
Chelsea win by a 2-goal margin. Either 2-0 or 3-1.
2-0, 3-1. Okay, so you're expecting Manchester United to break Chelsea's rear guard by scoring?
Ronaldo is on the pitch. I mean, he's always favorite to score against any defense. And he's on 799 goals. He won the 800 and against big opposition as well.
Okay. Hopefully, Ronaldo gets his goal. And so, before we leave Manchester United, you just mentioned Ralf Rangnick now. So, like, from what we've seen in reports from Sky Sports, various sources, from Fabrizio Romano himself, like, it seems all but done that Ralf Rangnick will be taking over as interim manager of Manchester United until the end of the season. But there's a catch to it. He's trying to ensure that he gets a consultancy role when he steps down as the interim manager. So, do you think it's a good option, firstly? Because we all know that Ralf Rangnick is like the pioneer of the gegenpress. And we all know that one of the A-class students from the gegenpress is Jürgen Klopp. He has established that kind of pressing style in Europe. So, do you think, because looking at it, Manchester United lacks so many things. And one of the things they lack is how to actually press teams. So, do you think like it's a good option for this short term, like, because it's the job description says it itself, interim. So what do you think there about this Ralf Rangnick appointment that's about to happen?
I think this is the smartest decision United have made in almost a decade. I think every appointment since Ferguson left has been nonsense. We had Moyes, who was clearly just brought as Ferguson's son, godson or whatever, like, yeah, this is my fellow Scotsman, I wanted to manage the club. Absolute nonsense. They should have gone for a top coach. They should have gone for Pep Guardiola then. They did not. Louis van Gaal was past his best. Mourinho was past his best. Who else? Ole was not good enough right from day one. So, this is the best appointment United have had in almost a decade. And I think Rafinha, like you said, will bring the pressing, but he also bring a pattern of play. He likes his team to play fast football. So, and that's where it will suit United, because they have Sancho, they have Rashford, and they have players who can be creative, who are good on the counter, so it will be good for them. But also, he also likes his team to play with possession when they can. It's not all about counter, counter, counter. So, United will still be a counter-attacking team against the likes of Man City and Liverpool. But against the lower side, you expect more controlled game with like good interplay and everything. So I think this is a good decision. But it's interesting, a good appointment. But it's interesting that Ralf Rangnick actually rejected the Chelsea job before they gave it to Tuchel, because it was on an interim basis, and he said, "I'm not an interim coach." But now he's an interim coach for Man U because they're going to give him that consultancy role at the end of the season, which just sounds funny to me, because what was the consultancy? Like, what was that? Like, is it that you're a board member, or you're the sporting director, or you're the director of football? I've never heard of a consultant of a club before. This is the first time I'm hearing it. So, I guess United must be there to give him that role.
The truth is, I actually tried to read more about it. So, the role, he will still be part of this decision making, and they will have to yield to some of his advice. And the role too, we see him like take, like, let's say, a pole position to the next appointment. So he will still be involved in the next appointment. But what I just wanted to highlight is this. So firstly, because this is, we have to bring a balance here. We cannot just paint Ralf Rangnick like the Messiah of Manchester United. So firstly, we have Pep Guardiola, who sees Marcel Bielsa as one of his idols and try to emulate the things he has done in the past and all of that. Now we have Jürgen Klopp, Thomas Tuchel, who is like student of Ralf Nadik. But the thing is, these two great teachers, they've not won anything. So why are we like gassing up this Radnick guy? Like he's going to actually come and start winning things with Manchester United. I know it's an interim basis, but like we've said it on this podcast, Manchester United is a team that is ready to win things. So what do you think the expectation would be for him coming into the job?
Okay, I think it's harsh to just say they've not won things because, okay, let's now look at the teams he has managed. He has not managed Bayern, he has not managed Dortmund, he has managed Hoffenheim, Leipzig, Schalke, took Schalke to the semi-finals, semi-finals of the Champions League. And now Schalke in Bundesliga 2. So that just shows you what he did, how amazing it was. That was in 2011. And then he started coaching at the age of 25. So this guy knew right from time that he wanted to be a coach, not even like anything else. So he studied the game and you can see that he invented actually pressing high up the pitch. He's virtually the one that invented it. So that alone tells you that he's a visionary and he knows what it takes to move a club forward. For United winning anything this season, I think it would be unfair to say that he needs to win something because United are in turmoil right now. All they need is someone with a firm hand because I think everyone has just been too nice at the ground. We heard what Ole said in his last interview, which the interview alone was embarrassing. The fact that they gave him an interview after sacking him and then the things he said were further just nonsense, talking about making friends and everything. So I think Rafinha is going to bring a firm hand. People have to be serious at the training ground. People have to be serious in matches. If you play and you don't play well, you're off. He's not the one that Lindelof will play nonsense and still play the next match. Same thing with Fred. Like, you play nonsense and keep playing. Rafinha could not accept that. So that's where I think United have struggled because Rafinha is a no-nonsense manager, but at the same time, he's a very good tactician. So I'm not expecting a trophy. If anything, maybe the FA Cup. But with this now, I can tell you that United are likely to finish in the top four.
I get what you mean. Like, fair enough. Like, let me be real. This is why I see it. I like the Radnick guy. I've read about a lot of things he has done. I've watched some of the things he has done on YouTube even long before now. But the thing is, I think this Ralf Rangnick's appointment is brilliant for United because think of it this way, United needs a structure in place for this season so that next season to be a springboard for them to go and win things. Think of Ralf Rangnick like, I'm not making comparisons, but just hear me out. Think of Ralf Rangnick as Lampard, gets the team in shape, build it so that when the next person comes on, they go and win things. So that's why.
I think you just insulted Ralf Rangnick. How can you compare him to Lampard?
No, I didn't say he's, oh my God. Yeah, you always do this thing. What I'm saying is he's just going to steady the ship, make sure the right structure is in place and the right discipline is in place so that when the next manager comes in, he can go on and win things.
Yeah, I get you. But you know where it now gets tricky for United is that next appointment because basically Ralf Rangnick has some principles. His teams are fast. His teams are press high of the pitch. His teams, like, we know those are the basic things his teams do. Press high and they're fast. So you need a manager that fits that philosophy. So if you're going to bring, like, a Simeone, bringing Rangnick was just pointless because next season, a manager that has a different philosophy will just scatter everything Rangnick could have done for this time to the end of the season. So they need a manager that fits that philosophy. Quick football, someone like Ten Hag, quick football. Pochettino, quick football, although I'm not seeing much at PSG, but at least that was what he did at Tottenham. So I think the next appointment is key. So if they don't get the next appointment right, this Ralf Rangnick role would have been pointless.
Okay. I agree with you, which I think they'll get Ten Hag because that's why they are being patient and trying to and get so on. If they get Pochettino, well, I don't think it's that bad for. We will see, though. It'll be interesting to see. But I hope they get... I'm just saying, I hope they get the boost of their manager because Peter Schmeichel is trying to push the agenda. So I hope they get him. I'm moving on. Let's move swiftly to some games. So before we move on to some fixtures, like Let's see. Liverpool will be facing Southampton in this weekend fixture.
Liverpool
in the Premier League. So I feel Liverpool, they are one of the best teams in Europe right now. We saw the way they played against Porto. And going by that, with the performance we've seen, even against Arsenal in the last Premier League games, like, what are we expecting from here? Do you think it's straightforward and seeing Liverpool win this, or we're expecting Southampton to cause an upset here?
Nope, no upset. Highest, best Southampton can do is to delay it, like Arsenal delayed it. Make them struggle, then late in the first half, they might Liverpool takes the lead, and then from there it's over. But I don't even think it will take. I don't even think it will take them up to late in the first half. I think Liverpool will exert their dominance pretty early on, and I see nothing short of like a 2-goal margin as well for Liverpool, at least.
Yeah, there you have it. Josh always being blunt. So Liverpool are the only team to have scored in all of their 12 Premier League matches this season. So they always score. So long day for Southampton. So moving on, we have Arsenal facing Newcastle this weekend. So what are we expecting from Edial's side? Like, I think this is a game that Edial, if he actually targets some players in that Arsenal team, like just like we saw Liverpool target some of the young stars when they are pressing so that they can actually get the ball off them. Like, I think Newcastle can have joy from this and come out from it with at least a point. What do you think?
Well, if we're talking about the managers, Eddie Howe and Arteta, I think Howe is a better coach than Arteta. But unfortunately for Eddie Howe, he needs to rely on his players, and his defenders are terrible. There is not one single defender in Newcastle that can make the bench of any top team in England. Not even the lineup. Like, no Newcastle defender can make Chelsea's bench, City's bench, Liverpool's bench. That's saying something. So I think as well as they will try to sit back and defend, you need to have players that can concentrate, that can defend, that know when to step up. They won't just sit back all day and then step up at the red. Like, there's a lot that needs to go right for Newcastle. And I just think that everything will not go right. Someone or one or two players will mess it up, and Arsenal will just sneak the win. At worst, Arsenal win by a narrow margin. The best Newcastle can hope for is a draw. Newcastle cannot win this game with their midfield and their defense. Yeah, their forwards are good, but the defense is just awful.
Yeah, that's interesting. I'll give Newcastle an out. I think this game will be like the Arsenal Crystal Palace game. I think it will end in a draw. I think something like a 1-1 or a 2-2, something like that. Next up, we have Manchester City facing West Ham. I think this is a very, very interesting fixture. We all know that West Ham, they've been causing upsets here. And we all know that Manchester City as well, the best team in Europe. So this is a very interesting clash. So what are you looking at, George? Because looking at this, West Ham, they just had a very good European outing as well. They won by 2-0, keeping a clean sheet as well. So what do you think here? Do you think West Ham have a chance against this Manchester City side, who are playing free-flowing football right now?
Yeah, West Ham have a chance against anybody. On their day, West Ham can compete with the best. But then the problem is, if City are their best and West Ham are their best, West Ham still don't stand a chance. That's just the problem. Because, the way City are playing, it just takes one moment. Cancelo can unlock defences. Bernardo Silva can. Foden can, although he's a doubt for the game. I see this as a match where West Ham will make it very tough. I mean, very, very tough. City are not going to ward them like 4 or 5 or anything like that. But it's going to be a hard-fought City win. I don't see an upset here, I think. Yeah, West Ham drew with them in the cup and then won on penalties. But, I mean, that was because there were penalties. So, I struggle to see West Ham getting anything out of the game, especially with Mikel Antonio's mini goal drought, which his FPL managers will be very angry about. But I mean, if Antonio doesn't score, who wants to score? It's just, and I see goals from everywhere in City. Anyone can score, so it's very hard to see anything but the City win.
Okay, fair enough. I think I agree with you there. So moving on. There's this match. There's a lot of sentimentality towards it. So Ranieri is going back to the place that gave him one of the most exciting memories he will ever have as a manager. And the memory, I'm sure when he goes there, he might be emotional about it. So Watford will be facing Leicester City at the King Power Stadium. So what do you think about that game?
This is the most difficult game to predict because Watford are not a good team, but they looked great last week against Ole's team because, of course, everyone looked great against Ole. But then Leicester have not been good this season. So on paper, you say Leicester are better than Watford, but this season, especially with Watford getting 2 wins in their last 4, so it looks like Watford are hitting a bit of form while Leicester are still in the doldrums. And I struggle to see Leicester being dominant. If anything, maybe Leicester can grind out a win. But then I don't think Leicester will lose, but I'm not confident they will win either.
Interesting. I think, to me, personally, Leicester City striker Jamie Vardy has scored in one of his last 3 home meetings against Watford, and 3 of the times they scored was from the penalty spot. Looking at it, Jamie Vardy is not in current form now. And yes, Leicester won in the European outing, but you have to remember that this Watford team won against big dogs like Manchester United. And that
big dogs that couldn't buy it because of their manager kept them on the leash. So I mean, even just removed all their teeth, like virtually. That's all really.
The reason why I'm highlighting this is for them to win against Manchester United, even if it was a terrible Manchester United side on the day, like to give them a lot of confidence. And looking at this in the Premier League, Watford, they are looking like they are trying to hit a kind of run or a kind of form. But I just think Leicester City, they are in a downward spiral right now. And I think Watford will edge it a bit and they will get the victory. That's why I see it.
It's actually hard to argue with that because I wouldn't be surprised if Watford win, but I mean, Vardy and maybe Ian Acho probably lead the line. And if those two play together, then I struggle to see how the Watford defense can cope with both of them. But if it's only Vardy, then yes, probably Watford win.
I'll just go out there and say Vardy needs to see this one out. Patrick Daka needs to start. And I think if Patrick Daka starts with Ian Acho, I think they'll get the win. That's just the way I see it.
Sorry to break it to you. Vardy is on droppable. And secondly, Vardy is on my FPL team. So how dare you?
Of course. Before we move on from the Premier League, one more fixture I'd like us to look at. Tottenham. The reason why I'm looking at this fixture is there a need for us to start getting worried? Because it seems like after the loss in the European outing in the Conference League, their manager, Antonio Conte, said he's not a magician and he can't perform miracles, that the job is very, very difficult, that now he has seen the reality of the job. Do you think right now the expectations need to be unchecked? Because right now, they're not really performing. Their star man, Harry Kane, has not been performing at all this season. And now they face a Burnley side that we all know on their day, Burnley is very, very difficult to beat. So what are you expecting from this fixture?
In all honesty, I struggle to see Tottenham winning this game because Burnley are, like you said, on their day, very resolute defensively. And then they are resolute defensively against the best sides. And now talk of a struggling Tottenham side. Of course, they are not going to be faced by facing Tottenham. And then look at the fact that, like you said, Antonio Conte said that this is his toughest job so far in his career. And that's saying something, considering that Chelsea finished 10th when he took over. Juventus finished 7th the previous season when he took over. So saying that this is more difficult than those two jobs is actually quite a statement. And I can't argue with him because Tottenham have been dreadful with Nuno and without Nuno. Even they were just lucky to beat Leeds at the weekend. So it's just a case of, I mean, Kane has scored 18 goals this season. A bunch of them for England, a bunch of them in the Conference League, only one in the Premier League. So, as far as I'm concerned, he has scored only one goal this season. The rest are irrelevant. And guess what? Moura that beat Spurs were not in existence the last time Spurs won a trophy.
Wow, that is mad.
The last time Spurs won a trophy was 2008, I think.
Yes, 2008.
Yeah, 8. Carling Cup final, League Cup, then called Carling Cup. Against Chelsea, and Mura were founded on 14th of May 2012, 4 years after that.
So, mad. That is mad.
A team that is 9 years old beat Tottenham. So, I mean, that just shows you how bad it is right now. So, I see them struggling and I see Burnley actually holding them to a draw, actually winning.
That is crazy. That is crazy. We'll see how this one goes. Like, my our listeners, if you're enjoying the podcast, kindly subscribe because it seems like Josh is on fire today, bringing up the stats and always being blunt. So, I think that is it for the EPL matches. Let's move over to La Liga. So, first off, the first place to start from La Liga is two teams that were terrible. One more than the other. They were terrible in Europe and now they're about to face each other. Villarreal versus Barcelona. So, looking at this, Villarreal had a shocking outing when they faced Manchester United. Barcelona had a decent performance. They could have easily lost that game to Benfica. So, Josh, what are we expecting for this? I know you like to bounce Barcelona very well, so I yield the floor to you this one.
No, see, I don't like to bash Barcelona. I like to say the truth.
Of course.
Unfortunately, the truth right now is that Barcelona have been terrible this season and are still getting, to me, what I saw against Benfica was not different from what I saw against Benfica under Koeman. The only difference was Darwin Núñez was on fire for Benfica that day and inspired them to a win. While this time around, their striker, I've even forgotten his name. I don't remember because I'm so disgusted with that finish. Late in the match, you hide the keeper and then you do that nonsense. How am I sure he's not a Barcelona fan? Because there's no other reason you miss that. So
Of course. You're always looking for things that are not there. Oh my God.
You have to be a Barcelona. No, tell me that someone who is a professional striker will miss that. Like, he must have wanted to miss it. So, the worst you do is on target and then the defender blocks it. But off target is impossible. Like, so, if I give you that chance and tell you, I want you to play this thing off target, it's harder to take it off target than to actually score.
That's the truth. The truth is, he should be scoring. He should be scoring. But when I analyze the Barcelona versus Benfica game, the truth is Barcelona, they were better than Benfica. But like, I don't like when fans say we're better than this team. That means we played well. Like, two things, like, two we've said this team very, very much. Two Olodos, one person will still carry first. Like, let's be real. So,
yeah, the Benfica weren't great either,
Yeah, Benfica were not great and Barcelona were not great. Barcelona were better than Benfica, but they were not great. So, I don't understand why everyone is trying to look at it like Barcelona were, because they were better than Benfica, that means they were great. The truth is, Barcelona need to get rid of some people and start relying on better players. Like, let me be real with you. Memphis Depay was very, very shady in that game. He was giving away the ball. His passes were off. Like, I don't understand what he was playing. And the truth is, Barcelona now need a miracle to qualify. If not, they'll be going straight to the Europa League.
And
so that's
one of the problems.
Yeah, go ahead.
I was just asking, is Memphis Depay now one of the problems?
He has always been one of the problems. Like, let's be real.
When he was the one saving the club.
No, understand what I'm saying. This is the thing. People look at GA too much. You need to look at the performances. When you watch Memphis Depay play, he's not the guy. Let me be real with you. You can look at his GA. His GA is fantastic, very good, very nice, but he's not the guy. His link-up play, when you're a Barcelona striker, you need to be linking up play very well, making runs off the ball constantly. Memphis Depay was caught offside more than any other player.
I want to ask you a question.
Okay.
Link-up play with who? Tell me with the attacking player of Barcelona, apart from Ansu Fati, and Memphis himself that has been good this season. Just tell me one. So when you say link up play with who exactly?
Let's not behave as if I don't know what I'm saying. Like, should show this. I've said this thing already. Barcelona lack attacking players. But what I'm saying, you need to be linking up well. Like, you can't tell me you can't give a accurate 5-yard pass. You give the ball away to the opponent. That is poor. You cannot tell me the players are free. Give them the accurate pass. Even if they are not a pure attacker, but give them the accurate pass as a professional.
Getting emotional. Calm down, my guy. Calm down. Understand. My club has been through this before, and God is helping us now. We're trying to get back to where we should be. So, I mean, you know my club, but I won't say it. So, I mean, I understand.
Okay. So now, let's before we drift too further, we all know how shit Barcelona is right now, and we all know how shit Villarreal behaved in the weekend. So now, what are we expecting from this battle of mediocrity now, Villarreal versus Barcelona? What are we expecting?
So one more thing I want to say is, Youssouf Demir was probably, in my opinion, Barcelona's best player against Benfica. But even Demir is not even part of Barcelona's future because he's on loan at the club. So if one of your best players in the match, in the Champions League, is actually on loan, so that shows that there's a problem. So when we have people like Dembele on big money, not even making the lineup, when they come on, they don't really make a difference. So, and then your best player was a lone player, it just says that the club is actually in a bit of something. Let's put it that way. For the game, I see. You know what? I wanted to say I see Barcelona winning, but really, do I see Barcelona winning anybody? I don't think so, because the way I'll put it is, Villarreal, I actually want to disagree with you slightly, saying that Villarreal were terrible. I think Villarreal's finishing against United was terrible, but the way they played for most of the game was actually decent, at least for the first hour. So what I'll say is, I expect Barcelona to keep their possession, pass here, pass there, huff and puff, hardly create anything. And Villarreal will hit them on the counter. Now, this is the thing. If Villarreal can actually finish their chances, they will beat Barcelona. But if they do what they did against United, then Barcelona will punish them like United punished them. So that's just it.
In the end, they just threw my line. But what I'll just say is, like you said, if Villarreal are able to finish their chances, they'll be able to get something from the game easily from Barcelona. But what I'll just say is, Villarreal becomes wasteful, I think Barcelona will get 3 points from them. That's the way I see it. It's very simple and straightforward like that in my eyes. So without dwelling on this, let's keep it stepping. I've been talking about this for a long time, and if you've been a long time listener, I think you could have heard me say this so many times. So up next, we're talking about Atleti now. Atleti this weekend will be facing Cadiz. Yes, on paper, they should be winning Cadiz. But right now, with the form Atleti has been showing, especially in the Champions League, like right now, I'm not even sure Atleti can even make it to the Europa on the current standings in the table. What is going on with Diego Simeone right now?
I think Simeone has a problem of being obsessed with trying to be hard to beat. He has forgotten that a 0-0 scoreline doesn't give you 3 points. It gives you 1 point. So he's too focused on, let's try to keep a clean sheet. Forgetting that right now he doesn't even have good defenders, at least not as good as the ones he had before, the likes of Godin, the likes of Felipe Luis and Juanfran. Those guys together were formidable. And also, that Jimenez was better than he is right now. He was better then. So it's a case of we are trying what has worked for you before, but right now you don't have the tools for it. What he has the tools for is actually attacking football, because you have your Felix, you have Suarez, you have Griezmann, who surprisingly is actually returning or trying to return to what we knew him to be, a very wonderful player. So you have all these attacking talents. Why don't you play on the front foot? Because to me, what I saw Atletico do against AC Milan, they actually wanted to draw that match goalless. Like, there's nothing anybody would tell me. Atletico Madrid did not come to that place to win. They came to play 0-0. And unfortunately for them, Milan got a late one. And that's how football works, because if you don't try to win, you always run the risk of actually losing the match. Because you need to... So, the thing is, he needs to change his mentality, because not only because he's outdated in terms of football has moved on from pack the bus, but then he doesn't even have the personnel to pack the bus properly. So why not just play what your players can play, attacking football?
So let me start by saying this. Diego Simeone doesn't know how to play attacking football. What he knows is how to set up a team defensively and make sure their hearts beat, then hit them on the break. But truth be told is, like you said, they don't have those players to do that. They have more of attacking flair players right now. And the way I see it is this. If Diego Simeone cannot get Atleti to the next round of the Champions League and they end up going to the Europa, I don't even think they can even make the Europa because on current standings, miracles can happen. If they go out of this Champions League and they don't finish at least second in La Liga, to me, I've said this before, Diego Simeone should resign. The reason for it is
You know, the first thing is, they play Porto and they will probably beat Porto. We've seen this movie before. Atletico just, like, we've seen different years that they squeeze through the group stages. So they play Porto, at least luckily for them, it's not Liverpool they play. There's every chance of them beating Porto and then they just sneak through.
Yes, there's every chance, but what I'm just saying at the end of the day is, if Diego Simeone is underachieving with this current team, because I think this team, on paper, they are the best team overall in La Liga. That's why I see it on paper. And if they cannot at least get to second and put up a title charge against the current leaders, I think he should resign. Because you've said it so many times, when managers overstay their welcome, let him not ruin the legacy that he has already created for himself in that club. Before you know it, everyone becomes toxic, and before you know, you start seeing blackouts of Diego Simeone out. You should leave before he becomes the villain. That's why I see it. Because right now, it seems like he has lost every clue of what he's doing. And because back then, I remember Atletico used to be feared. They used to be feared, especially when they go away. Or because when they go away to your team in Europe, they make sure that they come, they score an away goal. And or they just caused an upset to so many teams, and so many teams hate playing them. But right now they look like a joke. So it's getting embarrassing the way I see it. So I know like on paper they'll say they should be winning this game against Cadiz. But what do you think? Do you think they will win this game quite comfortably against Cadiz?
I wouldn't say quite comfortably. I'll say they struggle. They've struggled virtually every game this season. Even the games they've won by more than a goal margin, they've actually struggled. They make easy games hard work for themselves. So I will not be surprised if they leave it late against Cadiz. I will not be surprised if it's a defensive error. But I just, at the end of the day, I see them overcoming Cadiz.
Okay, fair enough. Okay, so next, we'll talk about the league leaders, Real Madrid. Real Madrid, they won their game quite comfortably against Sheriff, 3-0, a very comfortable victory for them. But this weekend they'll be facing off against Sevilla, who sits currently in the third position in the league table. So what are you expecting from this game, Josh?
I think this will be a test for Madrid, because Sevilla are a team that are not easy to beat. We know how Lopetegui likes to play on the counter-attack, and especially against the bigger teams. But the thing is, Real Madrid's midfield will be very, very difficult to stop. You have Modric and Cruz showing no signs of aging, at least in these last few weeks. And I think that midfield and Benzema and the Black Messiah up front, I think it will just be too much for Sevilla.
Who is the Black Messiah again? Jimmy Rodrigo?
No. Come on. I've said this before. Vinicius Jr.
Oh, my God. I will not even comment on that. So what is your prediction on this one?
Real Madrid win without keeping the clean sheet.
Okay, fair enough. So we expect goals in this match. So over to this Italian Serie A, one of my favorite leagues to be watching. So we have one of the big games, Juventus Atlanta. You've said how miserable and terrible Juventus have been so far this current campaign under Allegri. So do you think Atlanta will have a field day against Juventus?
Unfortunately, I don't think so. Because Atlanta have a special problem of their own. They are the the most wasteful team I've seen in Champions League this season. Like, I'm not even joking. They couldn't beat Young Boys, scored 3 goals, but still considered 3. Against United, played them off the park, home and away, and got only a point from both games. So, Atalanta have a problem of poor finishing, and if they do that against Juventus, we know that Chiesa can create magic out of nothing. We know that Dybala on his day is a good player. So, I just see, what I see is Atalanta dominating possession, playing well, creating chances, wasting them, and then Juve just sneak one and maybe 1-0.
Okay, so who is winning this? Juve, 1-0.
I say Juve win, but it might not be exactly 1-0, but Juve win. Not really.
All right, fair enough. So up next we've got Napoli versus Lazio. This is an interesting one because, like you've said already, or like we've said already countlessly on this podcast, Napoli seems like in pole position to actually go on and win this, like if everyone stays fit. But right now, having injuries dampen their ambition. So, what are we expecting from this fixture?
You just mentioned injuries, and Victor Osimhen just came to mind. He has been ruled out of the AFCON by Napoli, which is heartbreaking for him and for us who are fans of Nigerians. And I mean, for Nigeria's best player to be out of the tournament is actually quite sad to see. But for Napoli, I think it's actually sad for them as well because he has clearly been their best player this season, or maybe alongside Koulibaly, their best player. I see them getting results over like the next 2 months without him. But for this particular game, I worry, can Dries Mertens come in and play as a false nine because he hasn't played that role in quite a while. And I mean, he was sensational as a false nine under Mauricio Sarri, but that was really when he played it well. Since then, he hasn't been stellar in the role. So I just worry about them converting chances. They will play well, but I worry about how they convert chances. But then, luckily for them, they are playing against the Lazio side, who are also devoid of form and confidence. So I see Napoli winning it narrowly.
Interesting. Okay, I have to agree with you. I think Napoli is one of the better teams in that league. So I think that should be all for the Serie A. The remaining fixtures, I think. It will be a bit upset if some of them don't win. But let's just touch on my uncle Mourinho, AS Roma versus Torino. Just straightforward as well.
Roma don't know how to defend, but they know how to score. So I say they outscore Torino.
Okay. Okay, so really quickly, before we go to the FPL, in the Bundesliga, some of Bayern Munich's players, they got COVID, and we wish them speedy recovery. We hope they recover just in time.
My name.
Your namesake, of course. Of course. So I say we hope they recover just in time to face Barcelona. Wink, wink. But let's look at... the game that I really want to touch on, and because I'm touching on this game because of what we've been hearing from the media so far. So, Dortmund will be facing Wolfsburg away. So far, especially from the defeat against Sporting, they've been outcried already that their current manager should be fired. Do you think it's harsh or do you think it's warranted because they've been kind of underperforming since losing Haaland?
First of all, I feel bad for Haaland because Haaland is going to return to action in the Europa League. How is that possible? For arguably the best player of his generation, so far at least, he has been the best player of his generation, and returning to the Europa League, are you kidding me? Like, for that alone, the coach should be fired. For making Haaland play in the Europa League, he should be fired. But then, on a more serious note, I think what is worrying for me is I can accept playing well and losing. I can accept defending doggedly, and then a piece of brilliance beats your defense at the end. But what I cannot accept is the way Dortmund have played this season. Dortmund don't defend well. You know, I like to call Alexander Arnold the best defender in the world that cannot defend. For me, the second best defender in the world that cannot defend is Mats Hummels. Mats Hummels is loved by everybody. He has won a World Cup. He has won titles in Bundesliga. He cannot defend. And if Hummels is your best defender, someone that cannot defend is your best defender, then it already shows you that there are problems. And then to make matters worse, Donny Malen, I don't understand, because this is not the same player we saw at PSV. It's just like, I don't know. Dortmund, something strange has gone there, because they sent a shadow of Sancho to United and they got a shadow of Malen there. So, I don't know. Maybe Sancho should have stayed in Dortmund and Malen should have stayed in PSV. Everybody would have been happier now. So, and then another thing that really strikes me is his insistence on playing a 4-4-2 diamond. It's clearly not working. Why don't you play to the strength of your players? Why do you have to be stubborn and say, I must play a front two? Like, I don't understand coaches that say, I have a philosophy, I must stick with it. No, you must do what your players can do. Then you now buy players in the transfer market that can fit your philosophy. He didn't buy players to fit his philosophy, so he should adjust to what they can do. But so far, he has been stubborn. And I see probably they won't sack him yet. But if things continue going like this by mid-December, before January, before the winter break, he'll be gone.
Like you said, nothing pisses me off the manager that is quite stubborn and don't play to the strength of their players. So against Wolfsburg, what are you expecting? Do you think Dortmund can actually win that match?
No Bellingham, no Haaland, and Dortmund win. I mean, sure, they can win because you have Marco Reus, one of the players of his German players of his generation. You have some good players, but then I don't know. Dortmund just look to me like they are clueless defensively, and I guess they have enough to beat Wolfsburg, but realistically speaking, beating Wolfsburg should not be a big deal. So for me to be here thinking, can they beat Wolfsburg, that shows you that there's a problem.
All right, cool. So let's get down to the segment of the show, which is the FPL. So let's get into it then, without further ado. So, Josh, how was your last game week?
It was mixed feelings for me. I had Cancelo, I had Trent doing miracles for me in defense. But then I sold Rudiger and then he got 14 points. So I guess that's just how life is sometimes. So that really hurt me because Rudiger hardly scores. And then, I don't know. I blame Leicester for not scoring. It's their fault.
Okay. So looking at this game week, a lot of things have changed in FPL dynamics. So firstly, I know a lot of people don't have the wildcard, so there's no need talking about a wildcard template right now. So the thing that has hit most people's teams are injuries. So let's look at them. First, those that have Chilwell or those that went to Niger and go and get Chilwell before Chelsea played Juve. What should they do, or what option should they be looking at right now?
I think saying calling it a knee-jerk reaction might be too harsh, because I was actually almost one of those people. I bought Rhys James on Sunday evening, or I think even Saturday evening, and it could easily have been Chilwell. Like, I literally, in my mind, I tossed a coin. Like, there was nothing to choose between them, because I watched the Leicester game and Chilwell was in the number 9 position a lot of the match. So, but then Rhys James was pulling wonderful crosses into the box. So for me, I was like, well, I just picked James. Not for any particular reason, but I just guessed James. And it looks like I was lucky because he's not the one that got injured. But we wish Chilwell a speedy recovery. But then replacements for Chilwell are quite a few. if you don't have Cancelo, he's a replacement. Cancelo, James, Alonso, who will probably replace Chilwell directly in the Chelsea lineup, is also a good option. Sergio Reguilón and Emerson Royal are also decent options if Tottenham can pick up any semblance of form under Conte. I think you want to replace him with an attacking fullback, or you can go cheaper with Livramento. I think all those are very good replacements.
Okay, fair enough. But the thing is, when you talk about Chilwell replacement and you talk about Alonso, there was something that happened in the Champions League. When Chilwell got injured, they brought in Cesar Azpilicueta. So do you think, like, as Alonso has fallen down the pecking order that far from what Thomas Tuchel would like, what we actually want to see from Thomas Tuchel? Because if you have someone like Alonso in your team, you should be at least expecting him to start now that Chilwell hasn't or isn't available.
I think Tuchel was feeling bad for Azpilicueta because he's the club captain, and for the last 5 matches, he has not gotten the kick because James has been in such wonderful form. So I think it was more of, you're my club captain, so I just wanted to have a run out. So he just put him on because the game was already very comfortable at that point. So why not put Azpilicueta just to give him game time? I think Alonso, Alonso will not start every single match. Azpilicueta can play there on the odd occasion, but let me say, for every 10 matches without Chilwell, I think Alonso plays 8 and Azpilicueta plays 2.
Okay. I think a lot of managers will be quite happy with the return. So, up next, we've got another injured player, or the player is doubtful for this game week, Phil Foden. So, do you think we should keep or hold Phil Foden, or we should bring in a replacement for him? And if we're looking at replacements, who should be the replacement for him?
Foden is a very, very tricky one because if Foden is fit, he starts. But the thing is he going to be fit? He didn't play in the Champions League, so that tells you that they didn't want to risk him, and so he might actually be fit for this game. But I don't know. If you have Foden and you don't have any pressing need in your team, I say you sell him for Diogo Jota because Jota is fit for Liverpool and they face Southampton. They should get some goals there, and if they get goals, Jota will probably be amongst the goals. So I would say sell Foden for Jota, but then don't do that if you have more pressing needs.
Okay, fair enough. So before we move on to attacking players, so there's this new thing we've introduced to the show, which is hold, buy, sell. So looking at this group of players, let's start from the defense. So I'll call 4 players, then 3 of them you feed them into the category, then one of them you just touch on which category you would like to put them in. So the categories, the player, the first one is Duffy, Lamptey, Rudiger, Diaz. So hold, buy, sell, which one of them?
Lamptey. I mean, who has Lamptey first of all? I don't think any serious manager has Lamptey. It's too early. He hasn't shown any sort of form for us to be buying him yet. So probably sell Lamptey. Keep Duffy as a good bench player. Keep Rudiger. Diaz, keep him as well because we know he's getting rotated, but when push comes to shove, he's a starter. So I'll say sell. Sell Lamptey and keep the rest.
Okay, because I was thinking you would say we should sell Diaz, one like Diaz, because especially at that price point, you can get someone that is actually doing more than what Diaz offers.
Oh, yeah, that's true. If when you put it like that, yeah, probably sell him because you have James is actually the same price as him. So, and there's a world of difference on FPL between both of them. So, probably sell Diaz.
Okay, cool. Fair enough. So the next one is midfield. So Rafinha. So remember the criteria: hold, buy, sell. So we have Rafinha. We have one of the frauds that have been annoying me, Mbeumo. We have Kai Havertz, And we have Gallagher. So, which category are you fixing them in?
I mean, to even say sell Mbeumo is an understatement. Like, throw him away. Just kick him out of your team. Like, I have Mbeumo, and unfortunately for me, I already made my free transfer this week. So, he has one more week in my team. But honestly, as soon as it is 1 p.m. Nigerian time, I'm selling him. Even before the weekend's fixtures kick off, I'm selling him. That's how I'm fed up. Sell Rafinha because he has been hit by injuries and illnesses a lot this season, and Leeds' upcoming fixtures are terrible. So sell Rafinha. For Havertz, I say keep him for just this week. If he doesn't start this weekend against Man U, sell him. But don't sell him yet. Just keep him and see if he's going to make the lineup. And the last one you mentioned, Gallagher. Obviously, keep Gallagher. Gallagher is on fire right now. So I say two keeps, two sells. Or one semi-keep. Havertz is like just for this weekend. See, and but then the rest, Rafinha and Mbeumo, kick them out right now.
Okay. I think for those that don't have Gallagher, definitely put Gallagher in your buy category. So buy him if you must, because I think Gallagher is one of the most transferring players from every top manager in FPL right now. So up next we've got attacking players. So we have Antonio, Jamie Vardy, we have Harriet Kane. We have who else? There's one more. We have Tony. So these four names. Okay, we have I just remembered one of the most talked about people as well. We have Wang. So there are six. No? Am I bugging? There are five. So we have Antonio, Vardy, Harriet Kane.
Ladies and gentlemen, best in mathematics, Leonard.
So we have Antonio, Vardy, Harriet Kane, Tony, and Wang. So remember the category: hold, buy, sell. So which one are we looking at?
Okay, first of all, you should not buy any of these players if you don't already have them, because none of them is in form. Like, you should not be buying any of these players. You sell Antonio, you keep Tony if you have him because he scored last week, so maybe that can kickstart some form. You keep Wang because he's cheap and he allows you to go for premium midfielders and defenders, so you can keep him for your bench. Vardy, I say keep Vardy because of his fixtures. But then, if you don't have him, you don't need to buy him. But if you have him, you keep him. For Kane, I say give Kane and Vardy one more week, just like Kai Havertz. So you keep them for this week. If they don't perform, kick them out.
Okay. I just want to add my.
Did I miss it?
If you had. Yeah, you said?
I was saying, did I miss any of the strikers you mentioned?
No. You covered all of them. I don't think you mentioned Tony.
Oh, no, I did. I said he scored, so he might be picking up from.
Okay, cool. Fair enough. Like, before we move on from this, I just want to say, like, if you've had Antonio for, seems like game week one, there's no need selling him because a lot of value is in him, and it would be annoying to be bringing 4.2 from somewhere else when you want to get him in the future.
8.2 is right now.
I won't say because of it right now, because when you start counting from the next game weeks to come, West Ham have one of the most enticing fixtures. They have a very, very good run of games coming up soon. So I think having Antonio
is possible
like the most by then.
I get what you mean by he has increased in value, but then it's just annoying to see an 8.2 million striker blanking week in, week out. It's annoying.
Yeah, I agree with you. So, like, remember how you said if you can get rid of all of them, or don't buy any of them. So So which are the, which strikers to FPL managers? Which one should we now be looking at? Because a lot of them seems to be underperforming.
I might sound like a crazy person, but I'm looking at Benteke because Crystal Palace have good fixtures coming up.
And Christian Benteke.
I'm actually being serious. The only reason why I wouldn't get him is because I already have Gallagher, but so I'm a bit weary of the double up. Crystal Palace are not a team I want to be doubling up on. But apart from that, Benteke is very cheap. I think it's 6.3 or 6.4 million right now. I think 6.4. And if you compare him to all the expensive strikers who are not performing, so why have them? If I'm looking at form, sorry, if I'm looking at fixtures, I'll say Ronaldo after the Chelsea and Arsenal game, probably go for Ronaldo and go for Vardy because of his fixtures. But if I'm talking about form, Benteke looks like the one that has been scoring with a bit of consistency recently.
That is a huge shout. Well, especially
because he's cheap and he allows you to go for the likes of Cancelo, James, and
what
also.
What is his price point?
What?
What is his price?
6.4.
Okay. Looks decent on paper. Looks decent. Okay. I know. You tell me there's no other person. But please, let's not make this FPL segment boring. So, who are we captaining this game with?
Well, I'm glad you said that because the first option is the God of Egypt. So, now that we've gotten that out of the way, let's go to the human options now. We've seen the God option, Salah. So, for the human options, I'll say... Now, this is something I've actually never done, but I'm considering captaining a defender this weekend. And that defender is Arnold. Because, I mean, Arnold is something else. He keeps clean sheets, he scores the assists. So, I say Arnold is an option. I'd say Vardy is an option. Because you've mentioned his good record against Watford. And let's face it, Watford are still Watford. They've not turned into Bayern Munich because they beat United last week. Watford are still Watford. So... I say Vardy, Salah, Arnold are three viable captaincy options this weekend.
I've gambled a lot on FPL, so this weekend I'll just go for the safest pick, which is Mo Salah. I'll humble myself.
Now you respect the God of Egypt. Now.
So before we close up, on Monday we won't be hosting a podcast, but let me hear your thoughts. Who do you think? Because on Monday will be the Ballon d'Or ceremony. So who do you think is winning that?
There has to be only one man. Lewandowski is head and shoulders above the rest. And I'll say, if this award was held in July, probably would have been Messi or Jorginho. But the fact that it's being held now in November and Messi's form has been horrible for PSG. Jorginho missed a penalty that would have sent his country to the World Cup. So that also counts against him. So, and Lewandowski has been Lewandowski since. So there's only one winner for me.
Okay, for me, I don't like this pity, people pitying Lewandowski saying because of they didn't give him last season. I think the Ballon d'Or guys that are organizing it, they should give Lewandowski a Ballon d'Or award for last year, which I think would be very, very fair and no one will argue. Then for this year's Ballon d'Or, I think it's Messi. Messi should win it.
Let me land.
Messi had a very, very, very fantastic year. Lewandowski is the highest goal scorer in this 2021 season. In this year calendar, he's the highest goal scorer. But the thing is, other than goals, it's not like last season when Lewandowski was very, very clear. He was better than everyone, goals, trophy, every other department. But this year, other than goals, the only thing Lewandowski is passing Messi with this year is just goals. Every other thing, Messi mops the floor with everyone else. Every other thing, every other department, Messi mops the floor with everyone else. So that's why me personally, I think Messi should win it. But we'll see. These awards are always interesting.
I understand it.
this award they always give it to shady people, but whoever wins it, Messi or Lewandowski, I won't be gutted. I'll be happy for any of them.
So are we pinning Jorginho in the bin?
No, Jorginho can't win it. Please, let's not do that. Let's not reduce the prestige of the award, please.
There's nobody. See what you just said? That's my reply for Messi or Jorginho winning it. Like, both of them don't deserve it. Lewandowski, clear, head and shoulders above both of them. So, if you're saying Jorginho doesn't deserve it, I agree with you. But
I've told you. For them, trying to analyze it, Lewandowski was just better than Messi in goals. Any other department, Messi mops the floor with him. That's just the truth. Assist, expected.
What does Messi see? You know how I answered the question. I told you if this award was held in July, it would have been a toss of a coin among the three of them, especially among Messi and Lewandowski. If it was held in July, but unfortunately for me, Messi, we're looking at the entire calendar year, so including this is whatever you want to call it, is showing at or non-show at PSG from August to November is also included. So for the last 4 months of what he has done with PSG, or more precisely what he has not done with PSG, that rules him out for me, because Lewandowski has started this season.
I don't want to drag this too further. Like what you said, I understand it, but for me, that doesn't make any sense. You can't rub someone off because of the last 4 months. I mean, when you even check it, he has not really been bad.
Leonard, you know the funny thing?
Yeah.
Remember last episode, I was telling you cannot put Gavi in the nominated list because he had just 4 good months. You remember? Because he started playing football in August.
Yes.
And then you told me, we have to include the last ones because...
So now you want to use it against me.
But now, for Messi's case, the last 4 months should not stop him. Are you seeing how you're shifting the goalposts?
No, you two, you're shifting the goalposts because, no care, you're baiting me in the podcast.
I'm not shifting the goalposts. Wait, hold on. I'm consistent with it. I said Gavi should not be there because he hasn't done anything in the last 4 months. And I said Lewandowski should be there now to should win it because he has been consistent in the last 4 months. So I'm basically the one consistent. You are shifting goalposts to suit your Barcelona players. Okay. Or in Messi's case, ex-Barcelona.
It's cool. I know. The end of this, this is what you try to do every day on the podcast.
No, it's calm.
Actually, so Joshua, where's your last any last word? Let's not walk too much. Any last words
for this episode? Messi should go nowhere close to the award. Security should hold him.
You should
from touching the award if he tries to.
Look at this guy, bro. Always running dead agenda. So, guys, I hope you enjoyed the weekend games and happy Thanksgiving. Peace be with you.